Hello, everyone, and welcome to On the Tee with Dr. P, where we talk golf, but with an academic twist. In this episode, we will look at what a seemingly boring cultural model has to do with your local golf club's bingo night. We will also ponder why we may need to rethink tradition just a little bit. And considering golf is full of tradition, this may be a pretty scary thing for some folks. No expensive textbooks are needed for this class, so let's get started. First, I wanted to say, I realize there are bigger problems in the world right now than what I'm about to say today. And I hope that you're trying to stay happy and healthy and calm in the face of uncertainty. So hopefully these next few minutes can provide you with a short distraction where you can focus on something else for a little bit. I've left my window of my studio open where I can hear the birds singing, and we're even having a little rain shower right now. So I'm hoping that some of these nature sounds will be a welcome background noise given some of the isolation that some of you may be experiencing right now. Now, with that said, let's start with a pop quiz. And I know that may bring forth some horrible, horrible memories for you, but here's the question. What do you think about when I say the word tradition? Do you think of family gatherings on certain holidays with certain foods? Or maybe a relative who has some awful joke that they tell every year at this gathering? Or how about the green jacket at the Masters? Or even the traditional jump into Poppy's Pond for the winner of the ANA? What exactly is a useful, purposeful tradition? And even more importantly, when's it time to move on from it? See, this concept of tradition, this is why we're going to talk about this a little while today. The concept of tradition hit me pretty hard the other day as I was leaving the clubhouse after a recent golf game. And for the record, yes, I was with my mom. And you may want to listen to an earlier episode, but yes, she hit those long putts all day. It never fails. So I'm about to take and steal her putter from her, but that may not help. Anyway, so I've walked these halls. Now, this is going to date me probably a little bit, but I've walked these halls of my country club for over 35 years. Now, as a child, I used the locker room to store my things as I spent the day at the pool. And as a teenager, I ate with my friends on the outdoor terrace and spent many summers there. And as an adult, I can gaze at the majestic golf course from the formally decorated dining room. You know, our club has changed a lot through the years, and we've been through some pretty tough times. Now, that's not a nature-esque sound right there. There goes an airplane. Now, back to the club. Again, you know, our club has changed a lot through the years, and we've been through some pretty tough times, and we've enjoyed some really good times too. And I'm sure this is probably familiar to you, many of you at your golf course. We've remodeled the building, we've had staff changes, and we even last year got lucky enough to install a slide at the pool. And now, no, just so you know, no, I've not used it. I don't plan on it. And I figure there's no need to do anything which would endanger my golf game. So I will not be sliding down the pool this year or ever. Now, downstairs in the clubhouse, there are, picture this, rows of pictures. And some of them are really interesting to see. For example, there's some that have swim teams from yesteryear, and there's some actually pretty cool vintage pictures of women donning their white gloves at a luncheon, since that's what we did in the 50s. That is really interesting to see and watch them or see them do the things that women did in the 50s. And there are even a few pieces of artwork which tend to brighten up the place downstairs. it's amazing to see the changes in the club. And this is a fairly young club compared to some of yours out there. And it's been interesting to watch how just time marches on. And you can see in these pictures the people and the places and the things that made the club what it is today. And but, you know, change is inevitable. And you can see that in these pictures. But there's one place in our building, in the clubhouse, that always catches my attention. It never fails. You see, there's a hall adjoining the pro shop where there are 48 framed pictures on display. 48. And these pictures are of all the club presidents dating all the way back to 1955. And as I've mentioned in a previous episode, I'm a fashion geek and I've studied it for many years. But it's so interesting to see the fashions evolve in these pictures. Imagine this, the black 1950s eyeglasses, you remember those? Those turned into 1970s disco collars, the ones that went all the way out to the shoulder. And then those fashions morphed into the 1980s plaid. It's wonderful. You can even imagine the 1960s slicked back hairstyles that scream a young Paul Newman. And as someone who loves fashion, it's like witnessing a time machine. It's incredible. But even it's fun. But even through all that changing fashion and the decades which embody them, there's one attribute that connects all 48 of these presidents, all 48 of these pictures. I like to call it the Hall of Presidents. And the Hall of Presidents are all white men. Now let's dive a little bit deeper into just my own club's leadership. Now, our board currently consists of 9 members. One of those members is a woman, and she holds the position of secretary. And it makes me ask the question, one woman on a 9-person board? Huh? Our greens committee, or our golf committee, is comprised of 5 members. There are 0, nada, none women on that committee. It makes you stand back and go, wait, what? Wait a minute. Now, granted, there have been a smattering of women throughout the years who have served on these entities, but it hasn't been consistent, and it sure hasn't been equal in number. But you may be asking, Dr. B, you know, raise your hand. Who cares? Or so what? Or why in the world does that matter at a little local club in our little part of the world? The club's still standing, isn't it? It's still there. Aren't you happy enough with that? The golf course is in good shape, or whatever reason that you want to give. It's still there. What's wrong with that? We've gotten this far, right? Well, I was thinking about this as far as academically, and there is a fairly recent 2015 journal article that talked a little bit about this, about women in leadership positions, namely corporate boards. The title of this article was Appointing Women to Boards, colon, because academic studies always have a colon in them. Appointing women to boards, colon, is there a cultural bias? Well, this article shed some light on the topic of female representation on corporate boards of organizations and companies. Now, this was a global study, and the authors analyzed 32 countries. So that's pretty good for a study like this. The authors analyzed 32 countries for women's representation on corporate boards. And here's a quote from that particular study. This is a finding. Countries which have the greatest tolerance for inequalities in the distribution of power and those that tend to value the role of men generally exhibit lower representations of women on boards. So hold that thought for a second, because basically what they're saying is if the country as a whole, of where the corporate board was housed, if they had the culture had a tolerance for inequality, then it's pretty likely we're not going to see a lot of women on those boards of those companies. But what's interesting about this study is how the authors based their research. They based it on a model called the Hofstadter model. Now, that is a really botched up pronunciation of a Southern person in the United States. So there are other much, much better pronunciations out there. But just so you know, that's what it is. This is a really famous model, actually. It's used in all kinds of contexts. But it's a model which shows the effects of society's culture on the values of that culture. And it also shows how those values within that culture relate to overall cultural behavior, you know, like cultural norms, things that you do in your country that are quote, normal to you. So in other words, what the cultural values are impact how people in that culture behave. It's pretty interesting. And within that model, there are several dimensions. They'll say, for example, the model will look at if a culture is extremely feminine in nature or is it more masculine. Or it also looks at if the culture tends to value more of a group activity like collectivism, or is it more based on individualism that everybody kind of looks out for themselves and that's the end of the story, that we're not in this together, we're in this for ourselves. So think about whatever country you're in right now, of what your dimension would be. Is your country seen a little bit more as masculine or feminine, or is it more about collectivism or not? Now, the authors found in these countries, or in the countries where there were no women or a few women on a corporate board, the country tended to value masculinity. And even further, they tended to have a greater tolerance for inequality. So the issue here is that the problem of underrepresentation on these corporate boards is not just selection or it's just that type of thing. It runs deeper within that culture of just how the culture views women. Now, this is really cool. A few countries which exhibited below average female representation on corporate boards are the following. And before I go on, they used average as being 8%. So I guess I have to say, in my opinion, that's a pretty sorry number. But 8%, okay, is what the average was for this. So female representation on corporate boards that were below that 8% average were Australia, China, Italy, Japan, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. Those are just a few. And for the record, Japan was at 2.08%. There are countries which had higher than the 8% average female representation. And a few of those are Sweden. They were at 23%. And South Africa was above the 8%, and France was as well. For those of you who may be curious, the United States was right at that 8%. We are at 8.04%. Still, that's a pretty sorry number. Okay, so it may be of interest to note that 67% of boards in Australia had no women on their corporate boards. Back here in the United States, of the boards in the U.S., only 46.6% had no women on their board, and Canada had no women on almost 52%, 51.6% of the boards that the authors analyzed. And the authors also looked at numbers and percentages of boards with at least one woman on the board, so they didn't just look at totally zero women. They did look when there was one woman on the board. The results, that average got a little better, but it just wasn't much. It's nothing to write home about, as my grandmother would say. But these are global companies, right? These are global brands. And what does that mean, though, for my local club in this little tiny place where there is only one woman on a 9-person board? You might say, aren't there more important things to deal with than this, Dr. P, like budgets at this club or planning trivia night or something like that? there's more important stuff out there to do, right? Aside from the simple fact that we have a significant portion of our club underrepresented, it allows for a sense of tradition to me, which is based on repetition only. Now, there may be some clubs out there, some golf courses that do better than this, but and are not underrepresented, and that's wonderful. But if it does allow for a sense of tradition, which is based solely on repetition, is tradition still okay? There are some traditions in golf I hope never change. We can sit and think about all kinds of things, of certain trophies given to certain players for certain things that they've done, things like that. But when traditions are based on a simple habit, and we talk about this in consumer behavior all the time, habitual behavior, if it's based on a simple habit or, quote, the way it has always been done, unquote, around here, it can lead to progression being stifled, being stopped. It may perpetuate and solidify a culture which may not have any room for some badly needed change. The 9-person board, and again, this is at my club only, that I'm talking from my opinion, the 9-person board needs an equal number of women on the board. The study shows that it's not there globally. But my little 9-person board needs an equal number of women because of the different perspectives which can be brought to the table that maybe I can bring, or several women can bring different perspectives to the table. The 5-person golf committee needs equal representation as well because not all players on the course are male. So you may be saying, well, maybe they don't want to do it. Maybe women don't want to be on the board. Well, are women even encouraged to seek a position on any of these entities? From my experience, I've offered to be on the golf committee a few times. And how should I say? I'm still waiting for that opportunity to serve in that way. So I can't even get a hold of meeting minutes. But, I'm still waiting on that opportunity. It's something that I would like to do, and I'm sure there are several of you out there at the same thing. And the culture overall, as we've seen in the study, the culture just isn't conducive for women to feel encouraged to serve. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't start emailing me saying you don't appreciate. I appreciate our board. I appreciate our golf committee. They're giving their precious time and energy voluntarily to do this for our golf course. But it's time. It's time for clubs to recruit. It's time for clubs to ask and encourage women to be on the boards and the golf committees. We have seen, if you want some proof, we've seen some of the positive outcomes when women are in leadership positions within the golf industry. Roberta Bowman is one. She's the Chief Brand and Communications Officer for the LPGA and has so far done a fantastic job with the promotion of the mission of the LPGA, a Drive On campaign. You may remember that. And of course, Susie Whaley, the president of the PGA, are both wonderful recent examples. The game of golf, namely, I'm just thinking of the LPGA and a few other organizations right now, they've been on a mission to encourage women and girls to take up the game, which is awesome. And I think we are seeing some positive outcomes and some good results from that. So now that we get women in there, they're playing, how can we encourage women in the same spirit, no less, to be involved at this level, to be involved in the leadership or at least participate in these committees and on these boards? Of where they play and where they are a part of the action, so to speak. Now look, study after study after study has shown that having women at the helm or at the top or whatever on a corporate board increases the value of that company in one or two ways or both. It's financial value, social value, or like I said, both. So it makes sense. It makes sense dollar-wise. It makes sense socially. So therefore, for the sake and the vitality of a local course, I guess this is almost a call to action that I hope you'll consider being on your local club board, men and women, the golf committee, any entity that you feel has value. And if you feel that this, you know, serving in this way isn't for you, that's fine. Maybe you know a woman who would be perfect for the job. So encourage her. Encourage her to seek these positions and put a perspective out there that would be helpful to everyone. And know that when you are, you know, these boards and these committees are making decisions all the time about, and you know this even in your own club, they're making decisions all the time, operational decisions or financial decisions, or here's our priorities this year for what we're going to do on the course. You know, sometimes we see things a little bit differently than somebody else does. Nothing necessarily that's wrong or better, just a different perspective. That maybe I see the course a little bit differently from you. Like literally sometimes I play a different tee box than you do and you're never on mine. Is there a reason for X, Y, and Z this happens? Or can we make sure that the bathrooms are always open? The course is. So, and I won't even get into that example. You don't want to hear it, but but sometimes other people can see things differently. And that's okay. So that's why it is important for equal representation of gender, of age, of ability to be on these boards and to be on these golf committees. So for now, I'm going to continue to walk down that hall in my own club and be appreciative of those who have led in the past. And I'll continue to walk past the decades and decades of fashion nightmares that are within those pictures. But hopefully someday when I get to the end of the Hall of Presidents, hopefully I'll see a break in the tradition. Well, folks, that is our class time for today. If you would like to binge listen to more golf-related podcasts, please check out our other pods on the Talking Golf Network. That's TalkingOlf. There's a one G in there. The website hosts several pods with all kinds of interesting golf-related topics, including history, architecture, and so much more. Now, you can email me at onthetwithdrp@gmail.com or on Twitter at drkelly04. Stay safe, stay well, stay happy, and of course, always go for the flag. See you next time on the Tee with Dr. P.